Warning, the following program may be too truthful for some liberals. Listener discretion is therefore advised.
And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. My guest today is Mr. Mike Zullo. He's the lead investigator for Sheriff Arpaio in the Obama probe. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. It's been a long time since you've been on the show. I'm finding myself saying I don't know where the time went. But tell me, Mike, what's been going on with the cold case posse? I think a lot of people have the misperception that if you haven't been doing a lot of interviews and if you haven't been holding press conferences, that there's nothing going on and that you guys are no longer investigating.
Yeah, I didn't think it'd be farther from the truth than that. After the second press conference, which Sheriff Arpaio did promise the public two updates, we made the decision to really withdraw from the media. We needed to do our work, and we needed to do it, you know, outside of the microscope, if you will, of media agencies that really were just against this whole issue. And we've been continuing ever since. We haven't stopped investigating this investigation. As a matter of fact, we've made strides going forward, strides that we haven't reported. We have newfound evidence that we have accumulated regarding the document. We are pursuing every lead. I have investigators working on certain aspects of the investigation that I can't discuss, but we're moving forward.
Okay, I realize you're limited in what you can say, but you know, you also know that as somebody who's doing a lot of volunteer work for the Cold Case Posse, I am privileged to a large number of these things, and I have to tell you, Mike, I'm more excited than I've been since this investigation started. One of the things that, and again, I know you can't be very specific, but one of the problems we've had in the past is that we've had a number of what a computer expert might call a smoking gun. We've had a number of smoking guns, rather, that computer experts could understand. But the general public, we would say one thing, or rather the cold case posse would say one thing, and then somebody else claiming to be an expert would say another, and the general public, which pretty much has computer knowledge limited to surfing the web and maybe typing a letter every once in a while, wouldn't know who to believe. But what I'm encouraged by is the most recent finding, and frankly, I consider it almost a miracle that it was discovered after this long, is something that everyone can understand. Is this going to end up being what people refer to as the smoking gun, in your opinion?
You know, the smoking gun, if you go back to what a smoking gun really is, it's something that's held in the hand of the perpetrator. I don't know if I can categorize it as a, quote, smoking gun, but what I can tell you is it is the most damaging, damning, definitive piece of evidence we have to date. And it hands down, will just drive a stake into the heart of this whole issue.
What I find interesting is that President Obama, in all likelihood, thought that when he released this cut and pasted together cheap electronic document that he purports to be his long-form birth certificate, that everything was going to stop and everything was going to go away. But a study that was done by MIT back in October demonstrated that since he released his long-form birth certificate, more people question his eligibility than ever before. Does that surprise you?
It really doesn't surprise me. I mean, that document was released for a purpose, and that purpose appears to have backfired. You know, you take a look at that document, and there's just something not right with it. And people know it. And people are really curious as to why did it take so long to produce it. If that document was where it's supposed to be or what it was supposed to be, it should have been released extremely early on. As a matter of fact, I don't believe there was any presidential candidate up until this time that ever refused to provide a birth document.
Well, I think he would argue that he produced that little short form that didn't have the name of the doctor, didn't have the name of the hospital. I don't know that any other state beside Hawaii actually puts a piece of junk like that out there. One of the things we know is that until it was pointed out to them, Mike, there were jobs within the state, within the government of Hawaii, for which they did not accept the short form. And then when that was pointed out, they scrubbed their websites and took that away. And they say, oh, well, that was never true. Well, people have those screen captures, and it was true. But the bottom line is he might argue that, well, I put out a short form, and that should have sufficed.
Well, you know, I know that may be the argument. If I go back to 2008, I believe there was a fabricated short form put out around that time frame, and somebody actually owned up to creating that fraudulent document. You know, the short form is a convenient thing for Hawaii to use. It doesn't really tell you anything. It is basically just saying, yeah, we have a birth certificate here. And that's all that it tells you. And when you get deeper into the way the Hawaii birth certificate statutes work, you can understand how come even Hawaiians themselves would not accept a short form certificate as proof. And that has to go back to, I believe it was something to do with land grants or something to that effect in Hawaii at the time, homestead acts or something of that, where you had to check the lineage of that individual, and you can't do it with a short form.
I personally think that birth records are so messed up in Hawaii, they may need to do what Puerto Rico did. What are your thoughts?
You know, I would almost agree with you. I think they have a major problem there. You know, during the course of our investigation, and I believe we reported it early on, that we had information about all kinds of nefarious activity going on in Hawaii over the decades that it became a state, of birth certificates being sold, different ways that foreigners were getting birth certificates. The place is, as far as I'm concerned, is so out of step with what needs to be done to control any kind of document process like that. It needs to be completely revamped. As a matter of fact, I believe that whole department needs to be investigated.
Well, I can tell you this. Whenever the second press conference took place, there was some lawyer who was not really a part of the Attorney General's office in Hawaii, but somehow representing them. I'm still not sure what that was all about, but who came forward and he was bragging on what a great job Hawaii does with their records. And I found it interesting because, one, you and I both know, because of the press conference, that the state of Hawaii likes to give birth certificates, and legally can do so since, I guess, 1982, can give birth certificates to people who were born abroad but had two parents who were residents of Hawaii, not citizens of the United States, but merely residents of Hawaii. And whenever we pointed that out, one of the criticisms that came back was, well, they do put the actual country of birth on that certificate. But Mike, you've referred to this as a breeder document. If I walk into a Social Security office and try to get one of those documents and they say, may I see your birth certificate, and I put it out there, the odds are they're not even going to notice the different country being on there. They're just going to see Hawaii at the top of it. If a clerk who's something beyond the typical government bureaucrat looks and says, wait a minute, that says you were born in Bangladesh, or that says you were born in Iran, or that says you were born in Jakarta, the person's going to say, oh, well, I was, but my parents were citizens, and so I have a U.S. birth certificate because my parents were citizens. I was just born while they were on vacation. And the person's going to say, oh, okay, I get it. They're going to give them the Social Security number. They're going to give them whatever they want. Aren't they? I mean, what is the significance of, well, we do put the country of birth on the Hawaiian birth certificate? I mean, what the hell does a Hawaiian birth certificate mean? They're essentially giving Hawaiian birth certificates to people who weren't born in Hawaii. I don't understand that. That's like giving someone a commercial license to drive an 18-wheeler, and then somewhere in microscopic print you say this person really doesn't have a license to drive an 18-wheeler. I don't get it.
You know, it's one of the baffling things about Hawaii statutes and the way that they do things. But even worse than that, Mark, someone could go in and get a birth certificate for an individual who isn't even present, just claiming that both parents declared Hawaii their state of residency 1 year prior to the birth, and all they have to come up with is either some kind of rent stub or something to prove residency in that state, and a birth certificate could be issued. The other thing you're able to do in Hawaii is go in with that same evidence and self-declare. You could be 80 years old, come in with some papers showing Hawaii officials, yeah, my mother and dad and father were here in 1930, and I was born in 1931, and here's the papers, and all of a sudden you're going to get a Hawaii birth certificate.
Well, I think what's interesting, too, is that our federal government already has provisions for obtaining U.S. citizenship for a child of two American citizens that just happens to be born abroad, whether it's due to a child being born abroad because the parents were on vacation or they were doing work overseas or whatever. There's already officially a federal program for obtaining that document. So why does Hawaii get to go into their own immigration laws? You're in Arizona. The president has said numerous times that Arizona isn't allowed, and the Supreme Court even, you know, not allowed to have its own separate immigration law. What kind of a country would we have if every state had their own immigration laws? But based on what you're telling me, Hawaii has its own separate set of immigration laws.
Hawaii has the ability to skirt around federal immigration naturalization process. Hawaii can confer citizenship to people that may never have been in the United States. Hawaii has some of the strangest birth certificate laws out there. And let me address something you said earlier. As far as somebody attesting to how fantastic Hawaii is with their care of birth records, let me point out that Governor Abercrombie, when he couldn't find Mr. Obama's birth certificate, ended up saying to the media that there was a written record of it in the state archives, a written record. Well, in the state archives is out of the chain of custody of the Department of Health in Hawaii. So for an agency that takes meticulous care of their birth records, they had some written record somewhere outside of their ability to know it even existed, outside of their care and custody, outside of preserving the chain of evidence of that document. So I don't know how good a job Hawaii really does.
They obviously don't communicate because Dr. Kiyomi Fukino had said that she saw the birth certificate back in 2008 and then later adjusted her statement to say, I've seen the vital statistic records, note the plural. But Abercrombie was looking around in early 2011 after he became governor, in the early part of 2011, which is approximately 2.5 years after Fukino said she had found it. So tell me this, Mike. You're Kiyomi Fukino. You're the former director of the Department of Health, and you're seeing stuff in the paper and on the television and on the national news that Governor Abercrombie is looking for Obama's birth certificate, and he can't find it. Would you not come forward and say, oh, wait, hey, Governor, don't you remember I found it back in 2008? Let me show you where it is. I find it ironic that she said she saw it in 2008, and then as late as 2011, he was running around looking for it, couldn't find it, and she didn't bother to tell him where it was. That doesn't even make common sense.
It doesn't make sense. It really just opens up the door to be suspect of anything that you are told from over there. And having firsthand experience now going over there twice, I can tell you I am suspect of whatever anyone tells me over there regarding this issue. There are problems with this. There is problems with the stories. They don't have the story down right. They don't have the story down pat. Things appear, things disappear. Things are called birth document, or then it goes called the birth files. I mean, what is it? Is it a one-page certificate that's supposed to be bound in a book with 499 others that should have been sitting there for 50 years, or is it not? Why is the book that it was supposedly bound in and ultimately found in, according to them, been sequestered and locked away so no one else can see it? What happened to that book in the last 10, 12, 15 months? How do we know that book wasn't rebound in a piece of paper slipped into it? And we don't know those answers yet. How come they are just staunchly resistant to opening up birth records to family members that by law have the right and the ability to see them, such as Virginia Sunohara, whose birth certificate number is so wildly out of sync, it doesn't make any sense. Why are they fighting that tooth and nail? What are they trying to hide? I mean, obviously, there's somebody there trying to hide something.
I think it's interesting that apparently they didn't all get together and discuss this, or they didn't all get the same memo. But one of the things I hear frequently is, oh, but so many officials have come forward and said that they saw the birth certificate. And when you analyze the words, now, if you go back to Lindell, you know, the previous Republican governor, she didn't say she saw it. She said that she sent Fukino in, and Fukino saw the birth certificate. Then Fukino amends her statement to say, I saw the vital statistics records. I wonder why the change. Then you have Fukino 16 days before the birth certificate is released saying, I saw the document and it was half written and it was half typed, and then it was released and it wasn't half written and half typed. And not one member of the media said, hey, Dr. Fukino, you didn't even get the description right. You said you saw it.
Are you wrong in your description, or did it change from the time you said that to the time it was released? I mean, no one's asking the obvious questions. Then you've got Abercrombie. I think his exact words, and I may be paraphrasing a little bit, there's a record in the file, but it's not going to satisfy some people, or he said something to that effect. So you've got Fukino initially saying she saw the birth certificate, then saying that she saw the vital statistics records. Then you've got Abercrombie calling it a record. And then you've got Fukino saying it's half written and half typed. It's not half written and half typed. And then I found this most interesting. Whenever the document was released, Abercrombie's exact words were, "Once again, we have found a way to show." He didn't say, "Hey, that birth certificate I was looking for, yeah, we found that." He says, "Once again, we have found a way to show." That's very weird. I mean, to me, what do you think?
Well, I think it's actually very well crafted in the sense to say, we're not telling you we have a birth certificate. We have a way to show you that he was born here. Because if you look at the birth certificate itself, or excuse me, I should say the PDF file that was released, they're just showing you something. That has no probative value at all. It's absolutely nothing. It exists in cyberspace. They've offered really no evidence. It has no evidentiary value. It cannot be used in any courtroom. They are showing you something. Just like everything else around this individual, they just want to show you things. They don't prove anything. They show you things. And I think what he was saying there was correct, that we just figured out another way to show you something to make you think something. Because I don't believe they had a legitimate birth certificate in that file. If they do have a birth certificate in that file, it certainly isn't what was represented on that PDF. I can tell you for a fact that the PDF is not an official document out of the state of Hawaii, regardless of what the verification, talking about information in the document. Information contained in the document is a far cry from verifying the authenticity of the document itself. They haven't done it. And the reason why they haven't done it is because they can't.
That's the one thing about this. No one within the state of Hawaii in the past or the present has come forward and said that document at whitehouse.gov is precisely what we gave Barack Obama's attorney, Judith Corley. Not one person has come forward and said that. Now, some people pointed out to the fact that somewhere in Hawaii, a website linked to it, and that's their verification. But when they were asked by Secretary of State Ken Bennett from Arizona for a verification, what they sent back was a very legally crafted response. We have the information in that document is verified by records in our file. I'm paraphrasing a tad, but not much. And what that's telling me is that there are probably multiple records, and I realize I'm speculating, but there are multiple records in Obama's vital statistics file at the Department of Health, most of which were probably added about the time he decided to run for president, and that they can verify the information with stuff they have on file. They don't tell you what they have on file. They certainly don't say it's in the form of a single one-page birth certificate, and they don't tell you whether or not any of the information was added very, very recently to that file. And what that reminds me of, Mike, is that reminds me of when Bill Clinton said that his answers regarding Monica Lewinsky were legally accurate but intentionally misleading. I think we have a lot of statements coming out of the Department of Health in Hawaii and out of the Attorney General's office in Hawaii and out of the Governor's office in Hawaii that may be legally accurate in the sense that they do have information on file that backs that information, but they're intentionally misleading because they're not telling us that most of that information came about decades after Obama was born and therefore has no legal value. At least that's my speculation. And I know you're in law enforcement. You can't get into speculation, but hopefully you'll at least agree with me that there's something really spooky about that. We have information that backs that information instead of just saying, that's it. That's what we gave them. No, 100%, no changes, nothing taken off, late filing not taken off, amended not taken off. That is word for word. If you took a picture of what we have on file and what they posted, that's the same thing. Why aren't we getting that from them?
Well, you know, Mark, I agree with you. I think that you're going to find, if anyone could ever get in there and records haven't been destroyed yet or scurried away, that you would find that in order to get the information as depicted on that electronic file to agree with the information contained in the file, that that information is going to come in bits and pieces, just like the manufacturing of the PDF. I think it's information upon information that gets you to a conclusion. And Hawaii statutes provide for that. There are ways to amend birth certificates. There are ways to alter information on birth certificates. Now, is it possible there was a registration of birth? Absolutely. I believe there was a registration of birth because that's how it got in the 1961 newspaper. However, that doesn't mean it happened in Kapalani Medical Center. That doesn't even mean it happened in Hawaii. It's just somebody registering a birth event, and it may have been missing information in that half-written, half-typed form that later on was amended. And we don't know if it was amended with proper information or not. Obviously, Kapalani Medical Center doesn't have records to prove the existence of a birth event happening in their hospital for this individual. They have no record, no information, have never claimed that the mother was even a patient there. We know Queens didn't because Queens has records and they said he was never here. So what happened here? Let's see, we have a hospital that they purport to be the site of the birth, but we have a half-written, half-typed form that isn't even in the registrar's office. It's stuck in a file someplace in the archives. And that document has never seen the light of day. And that document, as far as I am concerned, should be able to be viewed by the American people, by anyone asking for that, because if it's in the state archives, you should have access to it. And it's out of, and it was out of the care and custody of the Department of Health in Hawaii. But that document has never been shown. Nobody took a picture of it. You don't have Savannah Guthrie taking a picture of that document, do you?
Well,
why
not
is that?
I'm not sure what she took a picture of. All I know is she took a picture of the document, and when you look at the PDF file and remove the clipping mask, the document she took a picture of and the PDF file are no longer a match. I also know that even if we didn't have the Guthrie photo, a clipping mask in and of itself is proof of human tampering. You and I could probably do 3 hours on all the anomalies in this document, but I would like to get back to what the recent finding was. You know, I think my listeners have already figured this out. I actually know what it is. And I can tell you that, without saying anything to give it away, that I was bowled over because my first thought was, you don't have to be a computer expert to understand this. You don't have to know how to turn on a computer to understand this. I mean, this is just pretty straightforward. And in fact, I think you've got a big decision on your hands, or I guess I should say Sheriff Arpaio does, because for the first time ever, you're getting interest from people in varying levels of government in this information, correct?
We are. You know, I went to CPAC a couple weeks back and had meetings with prominent individuals, and after I had the ability to sit down and discuss this topic with them in ways that hasn't been discussed before, we have gotten interest. So I am hopeful that something good is going to happen here relatively soon. It's going to be a little different for us, though, going forward, because we may have to pick and choose where we want to place this. The evidence that we have now is so damning to this document that we, for the first time, really feel like as if we're in the driver's seat. This isn't anything that's ever been out there before.
So essentially, the issue is you've got people at varying levels of government who are saying, I would like to move forward on this. It probably wouldn't make sense to have them all moving forward at the same time. So one of the decisions you and Sheriff Arpaio have to make, and I hate to use the word pass the baton, but it's what comes to mind, is that as you finish your lap in this race, you've got to pass that baton on to someone else at the next level, and you've got to pass it on to the group that is going to be able to do the job most effectively. And for the first time ever, you've got several options.
That basically says it in a nutshell, Mark.
Okay.
For the first time ever, we have people that have the ability to do something with it talking to us.
Well, that's exciting, and I'm not sure what suddenly woke these people up. I think what we heard a lot of in 2011 and 2012 was, hey, he's not going to be reelected anyway, so he got away with one, whatever. And now people are realizing that ignoring the issue wasn't the right thing to do, that there's overwhelming evidence, and that this is something that really would be rather easy
to move forward on, but they simply chose not to, I think perhaps most because of fear of public ridicule. Would that be your thought?
It is fear of public ridicule is number one. Plus, it was a very effective disinformation campaign that was put out around it. And one of the most prominent parts of that is just the media blackout. You know, the media blackout, the way that that's viewed in disinformation is if I don't report on it, it never happened. And we are still coming across folks, even in Arizona, that don't know about this issue, let alone going east of Arizona. I mean, a lot of people in the nation have no idea that this investigation has taken place, have no idea that Sheriff Arpaio called it what he called it, a forgery. They have no idea where we are in this. And I'm going to tell you something else. They don't understand the severity of it. And I just want to make another point, Mark, just so we could put a bullet in this argument that's coming up. If anyone out there thinks that all they have to do now is produce a hard copy document and that satisfies this, they're wrong. Because a hard copy document, no matter what it was, we're not even going to talk about the authenticity of that document. But a hard copy document being produced now does not make this felony offense go away. This PDF has been manufactured by a human being with the intention to deceive. That does not go away just because somebody comes up with a paper document. And going back to what you talked about, Savannah Guthrie, with the clipping mask, and I have to give you a lot of credit for hanging in there with me, Mark, because you kept telling me about this clipping mask for a really long time, and I just couldn't get my head around it. But after, God, we must have had 15 conversations about this clipping mask as you were bringing this to my attention. That document, we know for a fact, is not the parent document of the PDF. In other words, that is not the document that was scanned in a computer that, quote, made the PDF file. We know that for a fact. That means whatever Savannah Guthrie held in her hand, she has no way to tell us if that was authentic or not. Because if we're to believe that the computer PDF image is the authentic scanned reproduction of the official document, it isn't what Savannah Guthrie held.
Let me back up just a little bit, Mike, because a lot of people might be listening for the first time. When Barack Obama's people held the press conference on April 27th, 2011, they were very careful to set Barack Obama up for plausible deniability. First of all the questions and answers took place before he entered the room. They passed out the copy of the long form and the short form before he entered the room. I think he had an interview with Oprah that day or something, so he had to get in there and get out very quickly. So he comes into the room, he says his piece about the birth certificate, and he leaves. Now, the birth certificate was not put on display, and the only reporter that was allowed to see the document, hold the document, touch the document, you know, famously she said, "I felt the raised seal," was Savannah Guthrie of NBC News, who strangely enough got a promotion a few days later, within a couple of weeks of doing that interview. But at any rate, Savannah Guthrie said, "I held the document in my hand, I felt the raised seal." Then she tweeted out, "I felt the raised seal, I snapped these pics," and she took two pictures of it. One is such a close-up, it's of no value, but the one that's taken a little bit away from the document shows the borders clearly. In fact, goes well outside the borders. And when you look at that and then compare it to the PDF in the computer, they don't match when you take the clipping mask off the PDF. Now, a lot of people say, well, you know, she used a cell phone camera. I don't know how they know that. I don't think she ever said it. But she used a cell phone camera, and it just wasn't good enough to pick up all the information. Two quick points. One, it picks up pencil markings on the document that are much lighter than those pencil markings at the bottom right. And why could her camera pick those up and not pick up the markings at the bottom right? Secondly, isn't it curious that she had some kind of a magic camera that could capture everything on the document except for what was behind the clipping mask. Strangely enough, nothing behind the clipping mask is seen on Savannah Guthrie's document, on her photograph. It's absolutely an insult to one's intelligence to say, well, the stuff that she didn't pick up that was beyond the clipping mask is because she used a cheap camera. Yeah, a magic camera that only doesn't pick up stuff that coincidentally is also hidden behind a clipping mask on the PDF. I tell you what, if there's anybody out there that actually believes that, I've got some beachfront property in Oklahoma that I'd like to sell you. It's just absolutely embarrassing. that anybody would suggest that. Now, here's the thing. Savannah Guthrie took the picture of the document, and based on that taking place, when it did, we know that she took the picture just before it was scanned into the computer and posted at whitehouse.gov. People say, oh, well, that's just some kind of a smudge that got on the document. One of them, the top one, looks a lot like a piece of vital statistics coding to me, but I've had computer experts look at it. Those are not smudges. Those are on the original document. So here's my thing, Mike. If that document was photographed by Savannah Guthrie and then scanned into a computer and posted at whitehouse.gov, that photograph that Savannah Guthrie took of the document and that scan of the document should be an exact match. And they are not. Okay? And Savannah Guthrie, I think, has a lot of questions that she's going to need to ultimately answer in terms of where she took that picture, what type of phone was being used. You know, and there are some other things that I'm not going to say on the air that she's going to need to answer. But I appreciate the fact that you didn't get ticked off at me for bringing that up over and over and over again, because I was rather persistent.
Yeah, to say the least. But the other side to this is you have to realize something. Savannah Guthrie could have been handed what? A copy of what? Where did it come from?
Well, I can tell you what they said it was. They said it was.
Well, I know what they said it was, but go ahead.
No, they said it was a certified copy that came from the Department of Health in Hawaii. It was one of two certified copies that came from the Department of Health. And some people say, well, they got two copies. Maybe she photographed one and the other one was scanned. No, because as someone who actually has been very supportive of Obama in this issue pointed out, the date stamp on the copy, the April 25th date stamp, and the registrar's stamp are placed by hand. There's no way to place both those two stamps separately by hand on two separate documents and have them line up perfectly. Savannah Guthrie's photograph and the document posted at whitehouse.gov, when you overlay them, those two stamps line up perfectly, so we know it's the same document. But as for what she really was handed, my goodness, Mike, who really knows? And I'm not blaming her on this. She doesn't know what she was handed, but who knows?
But that's the point, Mark. Who knows? Nobody knows. Nobody knows what they're looking at. If I'm your trusted source, and I hand you a piece of paper, if I print it out, the same certificate that's on the PDF at the White House, and I put some kind of seal on there to raise the paper, perforate the paper a little bit, and I'm a trusted source, and I tell you, yeah, here's his real birth certificate, you're going to believe me. That's what they're counting on. That's what they were counting on with this when they did this. See, they knew that they couldn't produce the real document for whatever reason. Is it that the real document doesn't exist, or does the real document have information on it that needs to be concealed? I mean, those are the two questions that are out there. So they couldn't put forward the real document, so they showed you something. They showed you something without ever showing you a piece of paper. And this is what they did. Now, out of everybody in the press corps that goes to the White House, only one individual was permitted to see that long-form birth certificate with Savannah Guthrie. That's suspect to me right off the top. The only person. No one's seen it since. No one knows where it is since. And the point that you make about the placement of the registrar stamp and the date stamp being identical to the PDF brings you to one conclusion. That's the printout of the PDF.
Well, that's
otherwise, how does that happen? Right. How does it happen?
Well, my thought is, you know, they're trying to portray this as what Savannah Guthrie took a picture of, that document she took a picture of, was scanned into a computer, and the PDF is the child, so to speak. But in reality, if there's information on the PDF that wasn't on the document photographed by Guthrie, can't be the parent. It has to be the other way around, as you just pointed out.
It has to be the child. Right.
Yes.
It has to be the child.
And it's amazing that anyone would even try to pull that off. But let's talk about something else on this. First of all, why was it so important to call a reporter aside and have her say, I felt the raised seal? The answer for that is when the short form came out, it didn't have a seal on it. If you look at the PDF file, they knew darn well that anyone looking at that PDF file would have trouble finding any remnant of a seal. So it was very important, because they knew people were going to be coming out saying, hey, the seal isn't there, or, oh, that seal that they put in, that's obviously fake, because you have to really blow that thing up to see any remnant of a seal. I mean, you really have to blow it up. So I think her statement, or perhaps I should say in this case, they used her to make sure that everybody would cease and desist questioning the seal. So what did she do? After she felt the race seal and took the picture and everything, she does a report. She sends in a report live to Brian Williams, and she says, Brian, I held up my hand. I felt the race seal, which she did. I mean, she felt the race seal. At least what they gave her had a race seal on it. And then she tweets out that day, I felt the race seal. Now, it's kind of interesting, of all the things she could have said about that document, yes, it was Capilani, I saw the doctor's name, I saw the signature. She could have said a lot of things about that document, but in the short time she had with Brian Williams, the first words out of her mouth, or almost the first words, were, I felt the race seal. She sends out a tweet. You can't put very much into a tweet. What does she say in her tweet? I felt the race seal. It's almost as if somebody called her aside and said, Savannah, we've got this really important talking point for you. The short form didn't have a seal on it. Everybody went crazy. And, you know, we're going to post this thing online, but it's so faint you may or may not be able to see the seal. We need one reporter to say they felt that seal. Will you do this? And, of course, they handed her a piece of paper, and she felt the seal and said, sure, I'll do that. But I felt that reporter was used to get out the point, hey, this document really does have a seal. I mean, it seems obvious to me she was given that as a talking point.
Well, and let me ask you, Mark, you might know this better than me. She works for what network?
NBC.
She works for NBC? Mm-hmm. Okay. So they choose one. She works for NBC. She's the only person to see it. She's out there in the design of this thing to just give credibility, because Savannah Guthrie saw it. It has to be real. That's what that's about. This is it's a staged event. They've created this event. Now, I don't know what she knows, what she doesn't know, but I can tell you what she felt in her hand is not the real McCoy. I don't think the document picked up purportedly by Mr. Obama's attorney in Hawaii has ever seen the light of day since they picked it up. I think it's got something on it that they can't disclose.
Like the words amended or late filing?
Correct, correct. That's what I think.
Okay, so here we are. My goodness, Mike, I mean, it's been almost 2 years since they released the document. I mean, on April 27th of this month, we're celebrating the two-year anniversary of the document. A lot of people, and you probably saw this in some of the comments posted on the boards when you went on a different radio show, a lot of people, even who believe in what's being said about the document not being authentic, are becoming very, very frustrated at just how slowly the wheels of justice are turning. What can you tell those people who are frustrated and they feel like, oh boy, here you are with another promise?
Well, look, it takes time. You know, I tried to explain a couple times over the last year that putting together a criminal investigation is a time-consuming process, and this takes a lot of time. The first two press conferences were updates. You know, we're into the meat of this investigation at this point. And the most recent discovery, if we didn't take the time that we did, we probably never would have discovered. And I know it's unfair in a sense for me to sit here and tell you about this without telling you what it is, but trust me, I can't tell you what it is, but the minute we can reveal what it is, I will do that. But I'm telling you, it hands down takes this argument off the table. The document is created. It's just as simple as that. It was built by layer upon layer, and it was done with an intent to deceive. And that's critical in this kind of investigation. Someone painstakingly went through the process of building this thing. Did a lousy job, thankfully for us, did a lousy job, but they did it. There's no reason to do it. If you or I had a copy of our birth certificate and we had to show it on the Internet, we could take a JPEG image of it and post it out there, or we could scan it into a PDF file if we wanted to and put it out there. It wouldn't have 9 links, 9 layers. It wouldn't have, you know, 150 layers. It would have what it has. It would be basically a one-dimensional document. So these things take time to develop.
Let me say something very quickly, because there are a lot of wannabe computer experts out there, and I'm quick to admit I'm not a computer expert, but you've been nice enough to let me rub elbows. In fact, it's not really about being nice. I had to, in order to receive instructions from you and your team in order to put those videos together. I ended up rubbing elbows with a lot of very credible computer experts over the course of the last year, year and a half. And one of the things we know is that there just isn't any computer explanation for this document. Initially, Nathan Goulding over at National Review Online said it might be optical character recognition software.
We know a simple check of the document properties shows that's not true. You can't search for words, you can't edit words, and there are no fonts recognized in the property section of the document. So we know it wasn't run through optical character software, optical character recognition or OCR software. In fact, you have to question if someone's really a computer expert if they don't think to check the properties of the document before making such an outlandish claim. Secondly, there have been these things put out there about adaptive compression and mixed raster compression. The construction of these layers is highly inconsistent with adaptive compression or mixed raster compression. And unfortunately, we have people out there who think they're computer experts, and they'll go to someone else that's a nationally recognized expert, and they really don't even know how to phrase the question. But for example, someone might ask a well-known, internationally known computer expert, can you have more than one one-bit layer with mixed raster compression? And that person will say, well, yes. But then the follow-up question should be, well, if those layers have color, is there a corresponding 8-bit layer for each 1-bit layer? And the answer would be, yes, you would have to have a corresponding 8-bit layer. In fact, if you look at the papers this individual has written, their diagrams clearly show that. But what I can tell you is that when you don't even know how to ask the question, naturally you're going to get an answer that you want. I mean, there's an old saying in the computer world, Mike, GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. And unfortunately, some of these questions being asked by people who proclaim themselves to be experts were bad questions. You know, they didn't know what question to ask. They didn't know what follow-up question to ask. Another example of that is the thing with the clipping mask. Someone pointed out the clipping mask hides information, and that can't be. So this person who claims to be an expert calls a friend, and as I always like to say, how can you prove you're an expert by doing anything more than, you know, calling a friend and asking them? But at any rate, the bottom line is they called a friend, and the friend told them, yes, you do get a clipping path whenever you scan a document into a computer. Yes, but when you click on that clipping mask, there's nothing behind it. If it's going to hide information, a human has to set it to do that. And even a computer expert who originally said the document was authentic agreed with me that information hidden by a clipping mask was proof of human tampering. But see, that's just it. The television stations didn't know to ask the expert about the clipping mask. The guy who proclaims himself to be an expert says, do you get a clipping mask? And the other person says, well, yeah, you do get a clipping mask. He doesn't know to ask the follow-up question, but would there be information hidden behind it if all you did was scan the document? So the problem that we have is that there are a whole bunch of wannabe computer experts who may be experts in some area of computing, but they're not graphics experts. They don't understand enough about this. So my question to you is, how frustrating has it been to have all these people putting information on the internet, saying they're experts, and really not even knowing enough about computers to be experts with Adobe software, really not being expert enough to know what questions to even be asking, but yet they're proclaiming themselves to be experts, and people in the public seem to buy it.
Well, you know, Mark, it's been one of the most frustrating experiences of this whole thing. I've had more people describe themselves as experts, put forth that they're an expert in this, they're an expert in that, and then after taking hours upon hours with some of these folks, discovering that really they don't know much and they could never be classified as an expert. You know, think about it like this. How many times in your life have you fried an egg? A couple hundred?
Yeah.
Does that make you an expert at frying an egg? Just because you turn on a computer and maybe you color in some things or photocrop some things doesn't make you an expert. So we had to combat that a lot. We had people that tried to infiltrate our investigation, trying to send in folks that really weren't trying to get to the bottom of this or help us in any sense, but trying to use them as infiltrators so they could frustrate the investigation. Here's the other thing that a lot of folks don't understand. We're in the business of evidence. Evidence that really is proof of facts in a legal proceeding. That's what we do. We have evidence. In other words, we could show you and substantiate our information to bring you to the conclusion. The other side of this, the folks out there that for some unknown reason want to try to defend this thing, they'll just come out there and they will just speak in conjecture or offer up some alternative that isn't based in any evidentiary fact. As a matter of fact, their process that they put forth fails almost immediately during any testing, but they will throw it out there. They will take an individual and they will prop an individual up as a so-called expert, as if this gives their argument some level of authority. Except when you get down to the bottom of it, their expert is no expert at all, and the methodology that they're using is flawed. This is all part of disinformation. And this is what the American people suffer, not only with this topic, but disinformation comes across the news medias, it comes across newspaper, it comes across in almost everything around this whole administration. And what they're teaching you now is we can lie to you and we can have evidence in front of you in plain sight and we can train you not to question it. And that's what this document thing to me is really all about. The truth is hiding in plain sight. And if you try to question it to get to the bottom of it, you're ostracized.
I would just like to find out who these experts are that support the other side. I mean, we discovered a long time ago that Jean-Claude Tremblay never told Fox News that the document was legit. Yet, as recently as a week ago, I saw people on the Internet saying even Fox's own experts said the document is legit. I mean, the guy's got an article he wrote saying he never told Jana Winter that. A lot of people will recognize Jana Winter as the reporter who's been entangled in the Colorado Fat Man shooting and who is refusing to give up a source. But at any rate, Jean-Claude Tremblay has said he never, ever told Jana Winter that. They quote Zakovich as saying the document is legit. What he said was is he thought the changes were consistent with enhancing the document, but he stated very plainly that information in the document was changed, although you can't tell what was changed or why. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. Now, let's keep in mind, Zakovich looked at this information very early on when most of the anomalies, especially the ones of the last week, weren't known. So, I mean, he came on very early when a lot of this stuff wasn't known. They quote Golding, or however you say his name, at National Review Online. The guy didn't even know to check the properties section of the document to determine whether OCR software was used. As Tom Harrison said to me yesterday, all they did at the National Review Online was prove our point. They optimized a document using adaptive compression, and they showed what a document should look like if it were optimized with adaptive compression. It had one-bit layer, not eight the way the Obama PDF does. So it's amazing how there are all these people out there that are being quoted as experts who say the document's legit, but when you dig into it, they're either not experts or they never said the document's legit. So it's just the misinformation is mind-boggling.
You know, it is mind-boggling, Mark. I mean, it's the battle, you know, and the only reason to do it is you want to conceal a bigger truth. That's the only reason to do it. So it makes it suspect every day that it goes on. Nobody in their right mind would take the time to fight this as hard as they're fighting unless they were trying to hide something else. If we were incorrect, it is easier to let us run and get proven wrong and then destroyed in the media than it is to constantly wage this disinformation battle. Why would you do it? You know, I've been called all kinds of things. You have to ask yourself, on this side of the equation, with the media against you, with every pundit out there against you on either liberal or conservative networks, what benefit would it be to the sheriff or myself to be fabricating this or lying about this? There is no benefit. We have nothing to gain. We're pursuing the truth. That's what we're pursuing. We know a crime has been committed, and it's been committed against the people of Maricopa County, Phoenix, Arizona. We have nothing else to gain from this. You know, even on the face of that, if you just sit back and you think about it, there would be no reason for Sheriff Arpaio, a 52-year law professional, a cop for 52 years, put his career on the line over this document if it wasn't so. And that's what they're fighting, because they know that. We're not wrong. We have the information. We have compelling information. We have overwhelming proof that what we said in the beginning is what we're saying today. It is a 100% forgery.
The proof is absolutely irrefutable.
It is, and you've seen it.
I have.
And it's irrefutable. It is irrefutable.
Well, Mike, on that note, I know you've got a decision. Well, I should say again, you and Sheriff Arpaio have a big decision to make regarding which particular people you turn this over to. I know that for the first time ever, you have numerous people interested. It's kind of a nice problem to have. As my friend Joe likes to say, that's the kind of problem you like to have.
It is going to be a difficult decision for you, and I pray to God that things move forward in the hands of the right people and that justice is achieved quickly.
Well, thanks, Mark, and I appreciate the time. Good talking to you.
Good talking to you as well. Thanks, Mike.
All right, Mark. Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar.